We talk a lot on this podcast about chess improvement, but when it comes to improving your hiring processes, Indeed is the platform you need. Indeed has over 350 million global monthly visitors, and it has a matching engine that helps you find quality work candidates fast. You can use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with your candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree that Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Years ago, when I was running a chess teaching business, I found it hard to find good help, and I had to go through a lot of back and forth to even screen potential candidates. Indeed allows you to do those things efficiently in one place. Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed for hiring, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of Perpetual Chess will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility if you go to Indeed.com/chess. Just go to Indeed.com/chess right now, and you'll be supporting our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast, Indeed.com/chess. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, everyone. I am Ben Johnson, and this is the Perpetual Chess Podcast. Perpetual Chess is a weekly chess interview show where we talk with accomplished chess players, authors, and personalities about their lives, their careers, and how to improve at chess. Perpetual Chess is brought to you through the generosity of its Patreon and PayPal supporters and by Chessable.com. Hey, everyone, and welcome to episode 200 of Perpetual Chess. We have the honor of being joined by another legend of the game. He's been ranked as high as number 3 in the world and famously battled Grandmaster Viswanathan Anand to a standstill in the 2012 World Championship in Moscow before he lost in a playoff. He's won many tournaments, Weekend Z twice, Biel, Tilburg, over 30 in total. He's also an acclaimed author of 5 books, including the modern classic, Positional Decision Making in Chess. This year, he's published 2 more highly anticipated books with our friends at Quality Chess, with help from Grandmaster Jakob Augard. They are Technical Decision Making in Chess and Decision Making in Major Piece Endings. I have read them both, if not fully absorbed them yet, and they are also great books. So without further ado, here he is, Grandmaster Boris Gelfand. Grandmaster, thank you so much for doing this interview.
Yeah, thank you for inviting me.
Yes, well, I appreciate I always like to prepare as much as I can for my interviews, and your generosity in doing interviews precedes you. As I was just telling you, I greatly enjoyed your 2-part in conversation with Grandmaster Ganguly that you did a few months ago. And I know you've done good interviews with Tanya Sakhchev, and of course, you're very personal in your writing as well as instructive. So we're going to try to keep things fresh, but I encourage listeners who I think will enjoy this interview to also check out the other wisdom you have shared in various media forms. So Grandmaster Gelfand, I thought it might be fun to start if I just read you a few quotes that I picked from some of your books.
Yeah, sure.
You could maybe expound on them a little bit.
Okay.
So one common topic, of course, on the Perpetual Chess Podcast is chess improvement. So I thought I would just dive right in from one of your new ones, from Major Piece Endings, which, by the way, none other than Jakob Augard says is his favorite book that he's worked on, which listeners who are familiar with his catalog and his work will recognize what high praise that is. And I can see why in terms of digging in. And I thought I'd just start with this improvement tidbit that you shared, because I'm sure a player of your stature gets asked for chess improvement tips all the time. So you said solve high quality exercises, read high quality books, and analyze games and positions thoroughly until there are no questions left to answer. That is my suggested path to improvement. So you make it sound so simple.
Yeah, but okay, the question is, okay, maybe another thing is missing. Maybe I think it's a Claire didn't specify the, exactly this part, but also I think it's a good way to acquire as much knowledge as possible, like looking through the good games of good players. And but of course, the idea of you know, analysis and thinking by that each one who wants to improve have to think by himself, try to find what's wrong with or what he can improve in his personal game. I think it's clearly the path to for improvement. And I also, together with Jakub, we try to specify another ways, like to solve positions, high quality positions, but also, you know, simple position, it's good, but also like self-analysis, because I do believe, and I specify in all my books that, you know, when we, you know, play a game and then we, let's say, we lose, it's very, you know, tempting just to switch on the telephone to learn which move was wrong and say, oh, I lost because I didn't make this combination on this move. It will be plus five, I will win. I lost because, you know, because of it. But in fact, it's not the case. Everyone should analyze why he didn't make the move. Did he see this combination or not? Or maybe he thought when another, maybe he thought that his position is worse, so he was not looking for it. And many things are possible. Or maybe his position was lost of the whole game and he got some occasional chance and he claims that he was winning. There are many things possible. And each of us, I think, has its own strong points and weak points, or weaker points. So I think it's up to everyone who wants to improve is to, you know, strengthen his strong qualities and, you know, minimize, you know, his weak ones.
Okay, excellent advice. And you mentioned, of course, trying to resist the urge to sort of just turn on the engine and just focus on whatever the biggest tactical oversight you may have had was. And I've noticed this is a theme throughout your writing and your conversations, is just sort of the allure of engines and the potential danger of them. So I was curious, as a player who obviously came up with a sort of classical chess education, as we'll be discussing, but also one who's managed to maintain a very high level for decades now. So obviously you are incorporating engines in some way. So what's your approach for utilizing engines but not having them become a crutch?
No, yeah, it's a very good question, because I think I don't want to be misunderstood that it's a... great that we have engines to help us to analyze chess, to improve and to find new horizons which were unthinkable before engines. But also, I think we should push engines, not engine push us. When we look at position, I always try to think by myself, what move will I make? What is a plan I want here? Or is it a tactical possibility here? And then check this move sometimes with an engine, yeah, especially when I analyze opening, but I make opening preparation when the price of mistake is higher. Yeah, because you pay by your loss, you lose. When you analyze someone else, also I try not to overdo with the engines. When, let's say, I watch some big tournaments going around, I try to do it without, in order to keep my brain working. Otherwise, it's very easy just to see, you know, on the server the assessment and stop thinking. So I think if you're a chess player, it's necessary to keep your mind sharp, and there is no better way but to think along the lines of great players who are playing, you know, online or live. I mean. And another thing, what it's important when we analyze the puts and engine, it's also it shouldn't distract us why we make a mistake. Not okay, it's good to learn that we, let's say, missed a tactic or some nice maneuver which engine would spot or sometimes not, or we can by analyzing check that this maneuver or this tactic was good. But also the main reason for improvement is to understand why we did it. Because for everyone, let's say if two players make the same mistake, it could be totally different reasons. One maybe saw the idea and let's say didn't believe this combination works. Another just okay said, okay, it's too sharp. I prefer to play more quiet. And you know, I wouldn't even think about it. So it could be totally different reasons. And I think engines are incredible tools that are available, but it's a bit like with a knife. Yeah, we can chop onions, we can, or tomatoes, we can do some things, but we can also, if we use it in the wrong way, we can harm ourselves.
Yes, I've done both. So, but what would you say, Grandmaster Gelfand, to someone who says, okay, it's nice that you say to have the engine off and try to appreciate what's going on, but you're a world-class player, so you're able to do that. But maybe someone at a more novice level, if they don't have the engine on when they try to watch a game, what if they may feel just totally lost?
No, I don't think so, because, you know, I remember when it was a I'll tell a story. Probably it's in one of my books. I was 11 years old, and my city where I was born in Minsk in Belarus, it was a Soviet Union championship where Jan Garry Kasparov played, Mikhail Tal, ex-world champion, Yefim Geller, who won. Great players, yeah. 18 great players. And each day I was going there, and I think I got this tip from some of the seconds of the player, I think from both Boris Postovsky, who was U.S. Team captain and who won four Olympics with Russian national team, and Alexander Nikitin, who was Kasparov second. They saw a young boy sitting there, so both of them gave me a good advice to think about by myself, to make notes, and then come home and analyze by myself and to compare what the players did with my thinking. And that's how they suggested I will improve. And at that time, it was impossible even to imagine that computer would exist, right. That engines, let alone engines. So I got this habit from my childhood years, and also so everyone can do it. Later on, of course, nowadays, everyone can check it with computer. But I think, of course, it would be good to check, let's say, your thinking with a computer thinking. It's a wonderful possibility to check your way of thinking. But if we don't develop our habit to think, then, okay, no engine. When we'll go and play a tournament game or online game, no engine will help us.
Yeah, I had highlighted that story. You do mention it in one of your books. And yeah, I just couldn't imagine. I mean, I know you were a strong junior, even as I think you would have been 11 at the time. But what was it like to see your heroes up close? Did you get to meet any of them? Did it feel surreal? I mean, we had so much less access to top players back in those days. So how did it feel?
I think for me, it was one of the strongest, you know, it's one of the stronger things which affected my chess career, that I was able, you know, it was 17 rounds and some games were adjourned at that time, and then it was days for adjournment, and I think I didn't miss a minute from this championship. And I remember, you know, my parents came to pick me up from there. It was another part of the city. So, And just one game was in progress, so they suggested we'll go home. And I said, no, let's wait 10 minutes till they make one or two more moves. And I collected a signature from all the participants and the chief arbiter, who was none else at legendary Salo Floor. So I keep it at home, all this signature. So for me, it was this tournament, I'm sure, gave incredible push for myself. Simply incredible.
Do you still have the autographs?
Yeah, sure.
Wow. Sure. That's an amazing story. Yeah, and hearing you talk about how you were kind of forced to think through the variations, I mean, it sounds like you got some great advice from the top trainers of the time. But also, like you say, there were no engines. You didn't really have a choice. That calls to mind something you said in the interview with Grandmaster Ganguly, where you said that you see a lot of the top young juniors playing like 1 minute chess. And that it calls to mind a problem where there's great resources for studying chess these days, but also great opportunity to waste time that didn't exist when you were a kid.
Yeah.
So what advice do you give? I know you do some work with some top juniors. You've done training camps in India and the US and other places. So what do you tell kids about how to manage that urge?
Yeah, I think, of course, what my tip is to have balance. Of course, vast majority of players of chess, especially young, enjoy to play more than maybe to study. But still, they realize one needs to study to improve. But it doesn't mean, especially nowadays, when there are no big choice of tournaments offline, that one should be kept out of practice. But I suggest to keep it to the sensibility. Let's say, of course, it's nice to play, but why to play bullet? Why to play 1 minute? Okay, put 5+3 or 3+2. And play also, you will have a pleasure to play a lot of games and also a lot of adrenaline pushing when, okay, you play on increment, but also you'll have possibility to think, possibility to develop. Also important to develop the feeling when to think, when is a critical moment. I think it's, I didn't cover it that much yet in my books, hopefully in the next volumes they saved it, but I think it's one of the important things that to feel when to think. And when you play, you know, bullet, you don't, you destroy this feeling. Another drawback, in my opinion, is that, you know, the value of a move is low. Yeah, when you play so many moves within one day, it's hard to tell yourself that each and every move is very important. Mm-hmm. And young guys or ones who played may pay a price. Of course, a good point is they developed incredible tactical alert. Yeah, okay, when you play so much, you mostly focus on tactical thing, and I'm sure the more you play, maybe you develop, you know, this two moves combination, you develop to the best. But you know, I were students, I work on most of, I think, already on the level they pass this urge, they are good in it. So it's if any of them wants to be really big players, they other qualities are important, to more important than this one.
Okay, and of course, when I read this quote, I couldn't help but think of Grandmaster Firouzja in particular, Ali Reza Firouzja, just because in addition to, you know, quickly ascending to the top 20 in the world as a teenager, he's renowned for long bullet sessions, sometimes against Magnus Carlsen himself. So a player of that stature with so much talent, does the advice change at all? Because one could argue that whatever he's doing must be working.
Yeah, of course, he has incredible potential, and whatever he is doing must be working. But also, you know, it depends. It depends. I believe it's still working. It's still working. Of course, one can argue that he has chance to play Magnus, and it's a unique experience. But still, I believe that if he'll play, let's say, 5 minutes or 10 minutes, it would do much better to him. And also, I'm sure he does a lot of work on the side. We can see that he's improving rapidly. So I'm sure he's not spending whole day playing bullet. I'm sure he spends... I have no, let's say, info, but by looking at his games, I'm sure that he's working on chess also. So it's up to everyone to find the balance.
Okay, yeah, good advice. And I know that when I had the privilege of interviewing your colleague, Grandmaster Kazymjanov, he also said that just because he's already, you know, top five, top 10 in blitz doesn't mean that that's the best use of his time necessarily.
Yeah, I think also, okay. Of course, whatever he does, as you said, will be good, but you can spend time more efficiently than this.
And what do you think, as such a classicist in terms of your education and your leanings, what do you think of the general sort of online chess boom? Do you enjoy seeing this move to online games, or do you still prefer the classical over the board long struggles?
No, I think that we should. I think my view is that. Nowadays, we don't have choice. We don't have possibility to have many offline tournaments. There are really numbered, and especially maybe a tournament like Norway in Stavanger, with six players, it's still possible to organize. But really, a majority of the tournaments were big opens where it's, I think nowadays, it's not realistic to organize for quite a time. So it's good that chess players can practice online, and there are some high-level events, and all chess fans can also both play and follow the best players. So it's good, but I will prefer this online chess to be an addition to top offline chess rather than a substitution. In general, my idea is I'm always in favor of everything which adds something to chess, while I am always generally against, but something, instead of. Of course, I like classical chess, but, okay, any extra rapid tournament or blitz tournament, I think it's great. But I don't like an idea that, let's say, classical tournaments will always be replaced by blitz for some reason, yeah, because some proponents of this are very active and they are very loud, yeah.
Yeah, and of course you got to participate in the Chess 24 Legends of Chess tournament and had some good results in there. What was it like for you to actually be the one playing in this, I don't know if I'd call it a new format, but elevated format?
No, it was really great. Yeah, I had the chance to play against really great players, and I really enjoyed it. Of course, it was a bit tough for me, like for everyone, because it was very intense. I think I played altogether 37 games in 9 days. So certain days I didn't have much energy. And also, okay, it was summer and lockdown, so it was no much possibilities to, you know, to do some physical exercise or things like this. But, okay, it was a really big pleasure to play with these players, and I highly enjoyed it. And I had chances to do better, but unfortunately, okay, I did what I did, which is decent, but still, when I analyze the game, it was really possibilities to do better, to fight more for top four.
Yeah, maybe next time they can slow down the schedule a little bit. Since it's explicitly billed as the Legends of Chess, they got to give the older guys a chance.
But I understand. Also, I understand their reasons. They wanted to see, you know, more of the, you know, legendary players, to see more games between them. Before earlier tournaments, I think it was very quick, you know, qualification stage, and then eight players started playing all these matches. for us, they gave us, they did us differently, and I really enjoyed it. I could play five games with Kramnik, a lot of games with Anand, okay, with Ivanchuk, with Peter Leko. So it was really great. I don't complain. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's always a trade-off. So it's a good point that you raise. Okay, let's dive into another quote from your writing. You say, in this age when we have all this available information, lots of great books, table bases on our phones, it is no longer a question about acquiring knowledge, but how to organize it.
Yes. I think it's a very important thing because, when I was young player, we totally lacked information. Okay, we had few books, we had to pick up knowledge, and for openings, okay, it was some opening books. Some of them are really interesting, but most of them are average quality. And each new game, it was, let's say, a tournament, let's say, in Tilburg, in Netherlands. And I remember, okay, in 1 or 2 months in some magazine, we'll have selection of the best games or things like this. So we really, information was really almost non-existent. While nowadays, each week, we have thousands of games, new games of top level, and our bases consist of million games. So it's very easy to lose oneself in this mass of information. It's very difficult to tell which information is useful one, and some information is better, it will not exist. So I think that's why there is we see big demand for chess books, for trainers, because it's very difficult. Nowadays, it becomes more difficult, to navigate through all this.
Yeah, trainers, I think, in some cases are becoming more a facilitator or a manager than necessarily just an imparter of knowledge. They just have to tell the student what to do, and then the student can go do it and then report back.
Yes. But also, I think it's also the role of trainer, if we look at it. I think no one can be taught something. One can learn something, and the trainer can assist. More or less like what I believe is a doctor, yeah? A doctor cannot cure you, yeah? Generally, yeah? Doctor can help you, yeah? If your body will be resistant to some infection or to something, doctor can help you. But if you don't have a proper mindset, I think it's very difficult to go through even a small illness.
Okay, I'd like to read one more quote just because this one made me laugh. It's from technical decision making in chess. So you tell the story of playing some difficult endings, and then you particularly say, "I had the chance to play him," referring to Jumabayev, in the inaugural Grand Swiss on the Isle of Man 2019, where we drew in 81 moves in a batshit crazy game. So I was just curious. I know that Grandmaster Agard helps you, and as he wrote in one of the forewords, you guys collaborate deeply on Skype for many hours to do this. Yeah, so yeah. It made hearing that quote made me wonder, was the batshit crazy game, was that your word choice or Jakob's?
No, it's Jakob's. Because my knowledge of English, it's not that rich as his one, yeah? But I think it's a good explanation of the game, because I think I played a brilliant novelty, and after a sharp game, I think I had a feeling I'm winning, and probably I had been, but my opponent was time trouble, then I was lost, and I was worse, and finally I saved this game.
Yeah, I loved that. And yeah, it made me wonder generally about your collaboration process. So it's clear that there are other situations where you also, if you've read Grandmaster Agard's writing in his own books, you can sort of get the sense that it might be some of his words. So are you you're going through the games when you write these books and telling him your thoughts, and then he kind of arranges them? Is that how it works?
No, it's one part of it, but also, of course, we analyze the games together, and also I think very important part of the thing that he many things, it's so natural for me that I don't even mention them. and he like extracts this knowledge from me.
Right.
Also, especially in last two books, which were out now, there are a lot of endgame position where really deep and concrete analysis was required. And there we analyzed, and then Jakub was checking it while writing, and was sending me an amendment that, let's say, position we thought it's drawn, it's one. And I was checking back and say, yeah, this is true, but White could play better one move earlier and still win. And we had these endless discussions on some really fascinating endings, which were later on put on the book. So I think it was a really great collaboration when, okay, we managed to combine both, okay, both good qualities of Jakub and myself.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, they're incredible work. And obviously, like in preparation for this interview, I was reading through them quickly, which is not how they're intended to be read. I know this was a project many years in the making. And I'm glad to hear you suggest that there might be more coming. So are you even going to come up for air and take a break before starting another project? Or what are you going to do right now while you're still in quarantine and unable to play OTB? Is it time to dig into the next one?
Yeah, it's one possibility. But for the moment, actually, I'm working also. Okay, I keep on working like a active player. Yeah, I analyze some openings and some middle games. But also, I go through some maybe games of mine, old games of mine. So it creates a lot of material for further books and also for online sessions I have with strong groups of players now in different countries.
So are you doing a lot of training these days?
I do quite a lot. Some months it's very intense, some months it's less. But I really do a lot in different again, in different countries, in different fields, both openings and, let's say, middle game, which I think I assembled quite a good materials, and end games and all different kind of chess improvement exists.
Well, I'm glad that you're keeping busy and sharing your knowledge. Yeah. Baris, I'd like to take a quick break, and then I'd like to dive into a couple listener questions, if you're okay with that.
Yeah.
As always, Perpetual Chess is proud to be brought to you in part by Chessable.com. Chessable is a chess learning website that utilizes its Move Trainer technology to help you learn and remember opening lines, tactical patterns, and endgames. It is endorsed by GM Magnus Carlsen and features courses from IM John Bartholomew, Sam Shanklin, Wesley So, and so many others. Chessable has over 100,000 members and features hundreds of courses both for free and for purchase. So if you haven't checked it out yet, please go to chessable.com and take a look around. Back to the interview.
And we are back, and we have a question from longtime friend, listener, and supporter of the podcast, Chris Wainscott, who says, Grandmaster Gelfand, first of all, let me say that the film Album 61 was very moving. By the way, for listeners, Album 61 is a documentary about the 2012 World Championship. It's available for free on YouTube. It is in Spanish, I believe, mostly, but there's English subtitles, and highly recommend you guys check it out, and I'll link to it for anyone who hasn't seen it. Getting back to Chris's question, he says, what an amazing tribute to your father, as well as a great recap of your match with Anand. My question is related to that match. How did you think your perspective of playing a match for the world championship past the age of 40 differs from that of players who have played for the title in their 20s? Do you think that you view the experience different than they did, that you appreciate it more?
Yeah, first of all, thank you for a question. And just a little thing, I think it's a mixture of English, Russian, and Hebrew in the movie.
Okay.
I think it's English subtitles. Yeah, YouTube, one can download on YouTube, or watch on YouTube, I think, freely now. And it's an award-winning movie. Yeah, it's a very good question, because I think I appreciated it more, because, okay, it took me so long years to get there. Because first time I played in candidates tournament and I was already rated in the world 1991. And I played a match almost 20 years later. And it's a whole, quite a big period. Okay, so a total mess in world championship, so I didn't have even a chance. And then, okay, finally I managed to get, I went through very tough qualification, so I really saw it as a really privilege to play it. And I really, maybe I was, of course I was very focused, but I think probably even I was a bit less stressed than I had to be, because I saw it's like a gift, yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm playing this match, yeah, it's a unique opportunity, and I think I prepared very well, and I think, of course, both of us made mistakes, but I think I played it very decently. I think it was an equal match.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely one of the closest world championship matches in modern history. It was fun hearing you and Grandmaster Ganguly kind of compare notes about openings and how he was saying they were totally unprepared for the Shveshnikov and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And could you talk, so you mentioned that it was a grueling candidate cycle. I mean, I know among other moments, you had to win with black against Kamsky to even make it to a playoff. So what did a moment like that feel like after all these years, as you say, many attempts, always sort of in the mix to be someone that could challenge for the world championship, and then to face a moment like that?
Yeah, I think it was the toughest moment through my qualification. It was so in the World Cup, I had to win the 7 matches. But I think in all these matches, I never been behind. Okay, I was leading, my opponent were winning back, but I don't think I ever had to win, you know, on demand. While in the candidates matches, I won first match against Mamedyarov with a very beautiful game. And then this Kamsky, it was 4 draws. I think both of us missed some winning possibilities in the match. And then tiebreak, I think it was low-quality match, at least from my perspective, 4 point. I didn't win in one move. I think he blundered the piece and I didn't take it one of the games. And then I played a horrible game with white and I lost like in 20 moves. So I was in must-win situation with black. But somehow, what I remember, I kept very big composure. And I think some other players in second said they were amazed that while waiting for... I think I was waiting for other match, you know, to complete, because I think we had to start the tiebreak and the game at the same time. So while I was waiting, I was, you know, very relaxed, was telling jokes to my seconds. And probably it helped me because, but also I think it helped me that Gata, I think he was not very practical. He went e4 for open Sicilian for open game. If he'll play like a first move, like he knows how to play like d4, knight f3, bishop g5 or bishop f4 against any move and then play very solidly, it will be much more difficult for me. Even so, in Sicilian, he had a chance, but also, okay, it's a sharp game. So I already have a good mindset that already I managed to get a complicated game. And when I managed to get back, I think the first tiebreak, I won pretty convincingly.
Yeah, and then, of course, ultimately go on to defeat Grishuk. So how did... Do you have any tips? Like, why do you think it is that you were so calm? Does it just come naturally to you, or is it something you've worked on?
I don't know. I maybe this experience. Actually, at that time, I didn't work with psychologist or something. But probably I had, you know, kind of such a big inner confidence in this moment that it was like this. I remember very well that when I played this candidate in Kazan, I had so much energy. I felt I had so much energy. It was difficult to explain why. Also, I think kind of few days before the match, we came with my seconds somewhere near to Kazan to some kind of village, and we stayed there, middle of nowhere. And I remember that each day in some opening, I was inventing some new ideas, which were better than computer suggested that time. I really remember, I felt really amazing that from all points of view at that, exactly at that moment, because I think 1 month or 3 weeks ago before the match, I played somewhere, and I remember that my play was not convincing at all.
Yeah, it's so mysterious what goes into like when you're when one is performing at their peak and when they aren't. Do you feel that that was your greatest moment in terms of chess strength?
It's a good question, but I also think maybe the greatest moment was 2013, right after the match.
Right.
Because I also preparation for the match was big. We invented a lot of ideas. We worked a lot on chess. And so right after the match, I think end of 2012, I won a tie in one of Grand Prix. I played well. In 2013, I tied first Kisaronian and very strong Alekhine Memorial. Then I won Tal Memorial ahead of Magnus and others. Then I think 2013, I won another. I tied with Fabiano and won another Grand Prix, London Rapid. I went to a final and I missed, big advantage. I think I was in both games against Nakamura. I lost it then. I think I really, it was 2013 maybe, was the peak of career. But the whole period, let's say from 2009 when I won World Cup to 2013 was good. But also Mexico 2007. I really played really well, I think.
And being that you were already over the age of 40 by 2013, did you feel that you were making adjustments to your game based on age, or did you just kind of still feel like you were firing on all cylinders?
No. Oh, I didn't make any adjustments. I was firing on all cylinders, as you say. and also, I also saw it as a challenge because I was sure that, okay, because, I remember when I was somewhere, in 2004, 2005, everyone around, I was maybe 30 plus, yeah? And everyone around was telling that, okay, you passed your peak, your career is over. So, and I didn't believe it. So when, things started to go well, I felt it also, justifications that things I believed were right. And I was, and also what I believe also, I think it had a big influence on other chess players because we see that the career of some players I saw were about to expire, in my opinion, but after this, they had another peaks at 40 or something, and they proved that it's possible to play really well at this age.
Yeah, and I know you discussed it a few times in your interview with Grandmaster Ganguly that you focus on your health and your exercise a lot for anyone looking for tips.
Yeah. But I try also to have positive exercises. During the match, actually, it's a really funny story. We had a discussion 2011, right before Kazan candidates. We played at the last Melody Amber tournament in the south of France. I think it was Monaco, maybe it was last was Nice. I don't remember. And one of the days, it was a lunch for whole players. It was an amazing tournament. And we went to one table at lunch with Kramnik, Anand, and Grishuk. And we discussed what requires to play good chess. And Anand and Kramnik were big supporters of gym. They said, unless you go to gym, you cannot keep your physical strength. Grishuk says, as I remember, he doesn't care at all and lit a cigarette. And I think I have a picture from this lunch. And I said that I believe in healthy lifestyle, I don't believe in gym, but I believe in, you know, long walks, healthy food, and balanced life. And but I remember, let's say, and then in like 1 month, we had these candidates for right to play Anand, and then Grishuk won a crazy tiebreak against Kramnik, and I then beat Grishuk. So all of us some kind were involved in all this world championship fight. And we had totally different ideas on this.
That's funny.
This table tennis exercises, right after I qualified for the match, and I still go on now for last, now it's a lockdown, yeah? So I miss some lessons, but I 3-4 times a week, I take a big lesson or with a group, we play tournaments. So I believe it's important to have some exercise.
That's a great story. Although, to be fair, Grandmaster Grishuk was a bit younger than you guys at the time. So
Yeah.
A bit easier for. I wonder if he'll change his tune when he gets to be in his mid-40s.
Nowadays he's more or less the same. No, he's still younger. I think he was from 83, so he'll be 37 in a couple of days.
Okay, yeah, he's still might get an awakening. We'll see.
Yes.
We have another question from a Patreon supporter of the podcast. He actually has several, but since you were discussing the candidates a few minutes ago, I wanted to get to that one. So Peter Newhall, another longtime friend and listener, asks, what are your thoughts on who you'd like to see win the current candidate cycle? And do you have any preferences for who we see in the next cycle besides yourself?
Thank you. It's a good question. No, first of all, I hope this candidate will finally, you know, be played, because it's really unfortunate, because all 8 players, you know, I know how much they did to prepare for it. And with this COVID, okay, it created mess. I don't want to blame no one. I think it's like, can be called force majeure. And obvious that all players and FIDE and organizers, they have goodwill, yeah. But okay, maybe some decisions are not perfect, but none of us can make perfect decision in such uncertainty conditions. So I think any match will be very interesting, because also I believe that even though that Maxim Vashkelagraf and Jan Nepomniachtchi has, I think, one more points than any other participants, I think tournament is very open, especially now when it will start one day from scratch. Yeah, I think Fabiano has a very good chances as well. I think he always played well in second half, and Grishuk always also 50%, but has one game. Okay, and the tournament would be switched. So I think it's open tournament, and I wish everyone a success. But I believe anyone who would qualify will have an interesting match with Magnus, but have his chances, because the victory by itself gives such a boost to self-confidence that anyone who will win will have chances.
Okay, interesting. Go on.
Yeah, for next cycle, for second question, I want to answer. Yeah, of course, thank you that your listeners, that he has a faith in me. I'll try my best, and so it won't be easy. But also, okay, I will also be happy if my friends Daniel Dubov, Jeffrey Shong would do well. But everyone who will do well, okay, I think it's... Actually, it's a good question, because this lockdown may change a lot. Some players are giving a lot to chess, working a lot to chess, while some others take it more easy. So after lockdown will be over, hopefully soon, we'll see chess life will resume in one way or another. I believe we'll see big changes on top of chess world.
Yeah, it will be interesting to see. I mean, it's so mentally taxing, this lockdown, that I think it will galvanize some people, and other people will have just totally shut down. Do you have any inside info on anyone who's working particularly hard?
I don't know, but I think, okay, from the games we can see that Daniil Dubov is working hard. He shows a lot of novelties. I'm sure Fabiano is working hard.
Yeah.
Also, he doesn't, some tournaments he skips, he doesn't play in each and every event, so it means he is very focused. But I don't have much, I know some young players with whom I am in touch are working hard. But I don't have any secret info.
Okay. So let's get to some other questions from Peter Newhall. He submitted a few. So Peter says, even though I feel I miss most of your career, I started following chess about 5 years ago, and I've become a big fan of yours. I've played several games against your first trainer, Edward Zelkin, who I'm happy to report is still actively playing and enjoying chess. I've also met your cousin Fima, who spoke of you very warmly. However, and then he says, now on to my questions. Your other books are on pretty general topics that apply in almost every game. However, heavy piece endgame seems very specific. How much practical use do you feel that this book has compared to the others? And is the reason behind the book that you love analyzing these types of endings and there isn't so much existing literature on them?
Yeah, thank you, Peter. Yeah. It's good, you know, my first trainer with whom I'm in touch and my cousin, first cousin, it's really great. So probably you're from Minnesota.
You got it, yeah.
Yeah, so I think there are a few reasons why. First of all, we planned the game on technical thing, but we planned the one volume. But this rook end games became too rich and they're so deep that we had to split certain time into two books. And I think we also had to leave some material out because of it. But I think the importance of this book is it's big because from all openings, it's clear that rook end games take part in maybe 80% of the cases. I mean, when it's a fight, not when it's, you know, totally one position. And also, so while writing a book, I think a couple of years ago, I was also checking some top-level tournaments which were going around. And certain time, I saw that each and every day, some really top player makes mistake in rook endgame. It's really amazed me. And then I started to analyze even more. And then it gave a push to it. And also, you know, I also in my online camps with very strong players, I put these rook end games, and I see that even the extremely strong players very often fail to, you know, to understand things or to make right decisions. So I think it's a beneficial for all levels. And I think we try to be very, you know, to give both concrete, you know, advices and general advice. I think we did a big effort to do both.
Yeah, I agree. And actually, another listener of the podcast, Jason Green, had asked you for what levels the book is appropriate. And having read it, but again, not studied it the way that I would like to or that I intend to, I would definitely echo that. I mean, obviously, you and Grandmaster Agard spent many years on this project. So certainly it's something that masters and FIDE masters and international masters and grandmasters can learn a lot from. Given the amount of the quality of the analysis and the detail. But as you say, the general principles and the stories and the general improvement advice is applicable across levels. So yeah, I was impressed with it. And if anything, I would say, getting to Peter's question, I think that the title is maybe makes it sound more narrow than it is, because rook and queen endings are a lot, you know? So I think it's not I was thinking it would be some very specific thing, but it seems pretty broadly applicable to me.
Yeah, and by may I add one more thing? I don't remember if I put it in the book. I don't think we put it. Is that why? Then I analyzed why this rook game is so rich, because I think it requires two different quality. One, a good calculation, because little finesse can change the assessment from draw to victory and some general understanding how to, you know, manage coordination between rook, king and pawns. And it's no other endgame has it. And here it's more, how to say, it's so rich that it's, you know, we made a book, but if given time, we, I think we'll be able to write 3 or 4 very interesting books on this subject.
Yeah, it's an interesting subject. And with chess speeding up generally, I feel like developing the skill of when to calculate is more important than ever. Because if you're playing like a 30-minute game or something like that, you get 1 or 2 moves, basically. So do you have any general advice, not to ruin the secrets you're going to reveal in your future projects, but what general advice would you give about sensing when to calculate?
Well, I think it's connected to what we already started talking about, when it's a critical moment, when the situation changes, and when we see we can change position and support in our favor, or opposite, we, if we'll not calculate precisely, position will be switched against our favor, then it's time to calculate. But, you know, always, you know, some short, precise calculation is necessary. If you miss, it's very easy. Chess is a complicated game. And, you know, when you think in general terms, you are often punished. And when you just calculate without any guidance, just checking move after move, also, okay, it's not an effective way. So to find this balance, you know, that's, I think, one of the main narratives of my books. And I try to think about it. And Jakob and I, we try to, you know, to give the best advice, but chess is too complicated game to specify exactly.
And what advice do you generally give for ways to improve one's calculation?
Well, I think there are a few things. Maybe Jakob's book, it's more scientific study of it, but I think if you take key things, I will give is to pay attention to your opponent's resources. That's what most of the players miss, because too often I see that chess players like to calculate for themselves, but they miss opponent's resources. Another possibility is try to, you know, make as many pieces work as possible, or as many pieces work of you as possible, and that's basically what I think it's a key. And also try to see many possibilities. Also, don't be stuck with one possibility. Look for different ideas, because very often we miss, initially get stuck with some idea and we miss something maybe even very simple on the side.
Okay, and you've also...
Include myself.
Yeah, no one's immune. You've also mentioned playing through books without using a chess set.
I think it's very good to develop a visualization, because when we play a chess game, I think we have to calculate lines and to think in head and keep our position into our to visualize a position. And for many players, it takes a lot of energy to visualize it. So when one develops this quality, it will save more energy to actually calculate.
Okay, excellent advice. And Grandmaster Gelfand, I just had kind of one more sort of major topic, if you're up for it.
Yes, yeah, sure.
Excellent. In researching for this interview, I, of course, read a lot about you and read your books and so on, but I didn't get all of the biographical information I might want. Now, of course, we discussed album 61, and your father's imprint of being a very supportive parent was all over that. And it was also cute seeing the scenes with your with your own children. And of course, you were a top player from a young age. So one question I was wondering is if you ever worked outside of chess. Did you ever have a job that wasn't chess related?
No, I never had. And actually, when I was about to graduate from high school, it was a big choice what to do. And I think it's a big choice for everyone. And I remember even Magnus's father, Henrik, asked me if Magnus has to become a professional. Well, my point of view, of course, okay, it's up to him. And I think we are all happy he decided to, because even though he was a great player already at 16, no one could be sure that he'll reach the heights he reached now. Yeah?
So he was 16 when Henrik asked you about that?
I think more or less. I think in one of the tournaments. But also for my parents, it was a big, I wouldn't say drama, yeah, but they were concerned, yeah, because no one knows, you know, it's not a stable job, yeah, if one is, you know, has some stable profession, okay, it doesn't work on one place, he can be in another or something. But, you know, my dedication was high, so I decided I would pursue my chess career. And so I never did anything outside chess.
And do you have any regrets of that decision?
No, I don't think. I think I had I have a good life. Yeah, I'm doing what I enjoy to. And each day, basically, I wake up in the morning and I am glad that I'll sit across a chessboard or screen with an engine and analyze some position or go through some chess games. So I am really glad, but I think it's generally it's a very tough choice for a young player who wants to be professional, but from the other point of view, he understands it's not a stable life. And can even so at the age of, you know, 17, 18, the life may seem rosy. It can go different way.
Yeah. So, and do you recall, or would you mind sharing what advice you gave Henrik Carlsen when he approached
you? No, I said that Magnus has incredible potential. It's up to them to decide, but okay, whatever. And Henrik, it's a great pay. I think it's an example of a great parent, yeah, because we have different examples of types of parents. And I think Henrik, excellent type, always supports Magnus. But I think he never pushed him. He never, you know, wanted to make his career on expense of his son. And we see it time and again among young players. And that's why I think I remember when Magnus won I think it was a New York match against Karakin. He mostly thanked his father. And for me, it was really great because I think also, you know, I had very close relations with my father and also I'm a father myself. So for me, it was, you know, I really appreciated it and I was touched by what he said about his father. So.
And in album 61, there's a moment when you say you're going to go home and then do a lesson with one of your children. So being that it's been many years since then, I was curious if they're doing any chess and how it was to do lessons with them.
Well, they don't do much chess. Actually, my son, who is 9 now, he recently has more interest, I think, a couple of times a week we play a game with him and we discuss things. They had, you know, in my city it's a big project by Grandmaster Alterman, and in most of schools and kindergartens there is a chess lesson once a week.
I've heard about this project.
Yeah, and our municipality supports it. And at the end of the year, it's normally a big event for children, and it's really a beautiful event where I normally take part if I'm not on some tournament somewhere abroad. But they went through it, they know chess, they appreciate it, but they have another let's say, interest in life. But I think this class is really good. Yeah, I think some qualities they learn from there, okay, enriches their life.
Yeah, it's
part of the life of the classmates. Yeah.
And are you seeing strong young players come up through the pipeline in Israel as a result of this initiative, or is it kind of too soon to judge?
No, I think in Israel it's, we have a big problem that actually it's a you know it develops this initiative and some other develops well grassroots, but general mentality of most of the chess community are so very anti-professional, anti-success. Eventually, they pushed me away from any chess life here because I'm simply disgusted to deal with these people, yeah, who has nothing to do with chess, but they simply try to degrade all chess to their primitive level of understanding. So we have some young talents, but I believe in this atmosphere, it's very difficult to, in this environment, it's very difficult to develop. I hope they'll manage to break through and develop. But unfortunately, last 5 years, it's a big, you know, it's very bad environment here for ones who are striving for improvement, for success.
Yeah, that's troubling to hear. I know you've mentioned that in the past, so I'm sorry to hear that there's not much sign of improvement. Another sort of related question I had is your decision to emigrate to Israel. What went into that decision? That must have been it's a weighty decision, obviously.
Yes. But I think it's kind of from a family, from my grandfather, who was, you know, we had big Jewish heritage. So I think I had this idea in one way or another for a certain time. So I decided it's a tough decision, but, you know, I'm happy I did it. Okay, I met my wife here. I have children. I have a lot of friends. It's a great country. So I'm very proud that I managed to bring some successes to my country together with my colleagues in Olympiads and the European team and individual and, you know, to at least for like 20 years to make my country one of the best in the world in chess.
Yeah, it's quite a legacy.
Yeah.
So one more topic, Grandmaster Gelfand, if you don't mind, I can't help but ask you about chess books.
Sure.
Because you mentioned in your interview with Grandmaster Ganguly, you at one time had more than 2,000 books, and it sounded like more so than other elite players I've had the chance to talk with. It sounds like you maybe keep up with the literature. So I was curious if any books have made a particular impression on you recently, and if not recently, then long term, what are your favorite chess books?
Yeah, it's a good question. Actually, my library was pretty big. I don't remember if I said it to Surya. But a big friend of mine, actually, he helped me a lot. He was running a chess club in my city, in Rishon LeZion. Big chess fan and big friend of mine. He had a huge library, and when he passed away, his children presented all chess books to me. So that's why, because of these unfortunate circumstances, I have a big chess library. I had a decent one, but number two. Actually, from recent books, actually, Anand File was very interesting for me because it's also a big part. It's about our match and how Anand prepared, so I learned a lot.
Yeah, that was a fascinating book.
Yes, I regret. Okay, if I read it before the match, you know, the methods, because some things he used in his preparation, we didn't realize it's important and probably it caused some energy and some mistakes from my side. But it's never late to learn. But from childhood books, I always like Yuri Rozovayev books on Rubinstein. Geller's book, Games book, which were reprinted recently actually by Quality Chess, called Nemesis. From puzzle books, I liked the Horten Jansa book from my childhood, but now we have quite a few books. Give me a minute. I'll check my bookshelves and I'll be back.
This is great, listeners. We're getting he's going live to the library to check out a few more books. And for those of you who have seen his interview with Grandmaster Ganguly, which will be on a camera, you can see Mr. Gelfand's trophy case right behind him, which is pretty cool to see as well. He's got the World Cup trophy and lots more. So just an amazing legacy on full display as we wait for this book.
I cannot, well, maybe I missed something, but, you know, there are different type of books, from open-end books. I think my friend Boris Savrok made a new, open-end books to a new level, but he wrote 10 books and now he took a pause to it. What I really impressed were, you know, from childhood also remember Paul Kerr's book on 1948 World Championship Tournament. I think it's a present of my first trainer, Edward Zelkin. He signed it to me when I was, I think, 8. So I really went through it and I think I liked it. But also I like the game selection of good players. Even so, nowadays we realize that some analyses are wrong and there are flaws in the engines easily pick a pinpoint where things went wrong. But I think each player had his own style and his own vision, and that what impressed me. And one of the things I always, a tip of advice I give to a young player who aspire high, is to develop his or her own style. Because everybody, if all of us would think alike and play the same way, chess will be boring.
Right.
It's always entertaining to see players with different approach, with different styles, and when the two players with a totally different approach meet each other, I think the most interesting games arise for the spectators.
The clash of styles are always fun. Of course, you grew up watching Karpov and Kasparov as the most legendary. But so Grandmaster Gelfand, I think we can leave it there. I just want to thank you for your time. The books are available from Quality Chess, of course, as well as Forward Chess, which books with this level of analysis, I appreciate being able to play through it. Although I don't know if you'd approve, Grandmaster Gelfand, of my not using a chess set when I play through the moves.
I think it's this book of major piece endgame, it will be, there are a lot of ideas, but also a lot of analysis. So
yeah.
I think it's really difficult to go in without board. I think technical decision making fits better for this. I think it's there are more explanations, there are more ideas. But also I think major piece endgame are also full of tips and ideas. So I think also I hope that chess fans and chess readers will appreciate it and will combine pleasure and improvement.
Yeah, I think that they will. And I can't help but ask, I know that we're on lockdown. Do you happen to have any OTB tournaments planned, or are you just staying at home for the foreseeable future?
Well, I have, but it's hard to predict how it will go. I have in the second half of November, in Croatia, it's a peace tournament with five Croatians and five foreigners, and I'm supposed to go there, and I hope it will be possible, but I think maybe in 10 days or so, I mean, beginning of November, I'll contact organizers again and see what the situation is there now. because situation changes from country to country each day. Also, I'm supposed to play for my club in Czech League, but I think it's lockdown there, and I think first round didn't take place, likely another round would not take place. So no one knows when it will happen.
Yeah.
Also, some tournaments for next year is planned. I kind of agreed with organizers, some good tournaments, but okay, we all have to just to wait and hope that the situation all over the world will be better, and this over the board tournament will be back again.
Yeah, we've all got to look out for safety first. But whenever you get back out there, we'll be rooting for you, Mr. Galfonso.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, and thank you for inviting me. And good luck to your podcast. And I want to wish all the listeners to stay safe in this time and to enjoy chess and chess books.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Special thanks, as always, to my producer, Matthew Passy, and thanks to those who help continue to spread the word about Perpetual Chess, whether it's via a positive review on a podcast platform or telling a friend or however you choose to do it. You can also engage with the Perpetual Chess community. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm at BennyFischel1, or join the Perpetual Facebook group and continue the conversation about the latest interview. For now, the Perpetual Chess Instagram page has gone back into retirement, but someday we will break the blockade and start marching up the board again. Last but not least, you can also email me through the podcast website or directly at ben@perpetualchesspod.com. But more than anything, I would like to express my gratitude to those who provide financial support to Perpetual Chess. Most of all, I want to thank Chessable for sponsoring the show, and to everyone who kicks in via PayPal or the Perpetual Chess Patreon page to support this community endeavor and allow me to sustain and continue to improve the show. So without further ado, I would like to give special thanks to the following people and entities. They are Chessable.com, Quality Chess Books, The Capital City Chess Club, The Abysmal Depths of Chess Blog, Adapta Interactive Web Designs and Services, Apprentice Twitch Channel, Andrew Alharji, Andrew Bach, Andy Ryerson, Aniti Deer, Austin Clough, Benjamin Porto, Bill Sigler, Kathy Carr, Chad Oliver, The Charlotte Chess Center, The Chess Central's Chess Blog, Chessmood.com, Chris Flanagan, Dan O'Hanlon, Daniel He, Danny Davidson, David Schreiber, Derek Jones, I am Dimitri Schneider, Drake Domingue, I am Eric Rosen, Eric Tam, Ewan Richardson, Faraz Sawaf, Gary Foreman, Glenn Downing, Greg Harfst, I am Greg Shahadi, Gregory Galuk, Guvin Manet, James Kennedy, Jens Green, Jeremy Nielsen, John Jernigan, John Rockefeller, John Cromarty, John MacArthur, Kelly Palmer, Kevin O'Callaghan, King Selt, Lucio Casada Silva, the Law Offices of Stuart Katz, LeelaAnalysis.com for cloud-based Leela engine analysis, Michael Kahn, FM Michael Oblin, Mike Zelazny, Mr. Mike Shahadi, the famous Mr. Dodgy, the Nerdnaze Twitch channel, Peter Sodi, Play More Chess Academy of the Hamden Chess Club, Reuven Fisher, Robert Karcher, the Seattle Chess Club, Shane Unger, Stephen Kelty, Stephen Martinez, Thomas Stanix, Thomas Tachenko, Todd Bryant of StrongChess.com, Todd Kennedy, The Vintage Patzers, which is a Chess.com improver group, Wayne Beam, William Hogarth, and I would also like to thank Aaron Waffler, Ace Viega, Adam Ralph of ChessEngland.com, Adrian Gutierrez, Alex Pejas, FM Andre Tarakov, Dr. Andrew Perry, Barry Hessian, Bill Juniper, Bill Moran, Brad and Andy Rosen, Brett Howard Lynn, Brian Mullis, Brian Tillis, Bruce Scott, Chad Hilton, Dr. Charles Snodgrass, Chris Wayne Scott, Christopher Baumgartner, Christopher Shabri, Chris Lott, Christopher Wood, I am Christoph Zalecki, aka Chess Explained, Coach J's Chess Academy, Costa Carras, Courtney Fry, Craig Mallon, Daniel Ginsberg, Daniel Naylor, Dave Saylor, David Bleskacek, David Hamblin, David Cramley of Chessable, David Lazarus of LazmanChess.com, Dalen Shelton, Dennis Parrish, Dirk Decker, FM Donnie Ariel, not I Am Elect, Drake Domingue, Dwayne Edmonds, Ed Daly, Ethan Smith, Hallelujah Cat, Ian Mason, Hendrik Ryland, Fide Arbiter, Felipe Melo Pereira, Fox Valley Chess Club, Francis Letarte-Lavoie, Dr. Frank Tortoris, Frank Zananis, Gary Andrews, Gary Lewis, Geert Vandervelt, Gene Stewart, Gerard Barter, Giovanni Russo, Hans Schutt, Harash Srinivasan, Jacob Kovac, Jacob Turan, Jacques Parry, James Aspinwall, James Benastia, James Moore, Jason Woolham, Jadeep Chakrabarty, Jeff Anderson, Jeffrey Martello, Yep Hoyland, Jerry Wells, Jim Ratliff, J.J. Trinad, Juan Almagor, Dr. John Fallon, John Fernandez, John Fantaine, John Hartman, John Jeffrey, John McMurtry, Jonathan Slater, Jose Rodriguez, Justin Gardner, Jen Shahadi, Joel Rocky, John Thompson, GM Josh Friedel, I am Kare Christensen, WGM Katarina Nemsova, Kelly Palmer, Kevin Pryor, Kior Gata of the Lakeshore Chess Club, I am Kostya Kovutsky, Krishna Gopala Krishnan, Kyle McAvoy, Larry Reiforth, Laura Boyovsky, Macaulay Peterson, Martin Knudsen, Martin Krug, Matthew Passy, Matthew Tedesco, the Mechanics Institute Chess Club of San Francisco, Michael Allard, Michael Hudson, Miguel Araspidi, Mike Clem, Mitchell Fabian, Nate Solon, Neil Bruce, Negmat Mulajanov, Nicholas Isabel, Olaf Mueller Michaels, GM Pascal Charbonneau, Passy Passanen, Paul Bain, Paul Clarkson, Paul Sweeney, Paulo Santana, Peter Lux, Randy Temple, Ricky Grijalva, Richard Hollenbach, Robert Tichy, Robert Turner, Roy Yearwood, Ryan Berg, the Say Chess YouTube channel, Scott Doherty, Scott McKinnon, Sebastian Finsterwalder, Shane Unger, Stefan Roller, Sven Retjek, WGM Tatya Vabrahamian, Tim Brennan of TacticsTime.com, Tim Seymour, Timothy Ha, Tom Edsel, Tomas Komanich, Tony Rotella, Tyron Price, Vishnu Srikumar, William Brock, William Juniper, William Peterson, FM Zhao Cheng of Chess1000.com, and Zhivko Stoyanov. Thanks for listening, everyone. I will catch you guys next week.
Podcast Network.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.